in Seattle, Seattle. And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you, because we're the realtors that you can trust. So go to RodandConsidDow.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 715 now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are live in the Les Schwab studio.
What is up, Ron and Don Nation?
Hey, coming up on the Ron and Don Show, we're going to talk about Jeff Bezos. He has three new houses down in Florida as he's left Washington State. Also, the non-sexual things that men like, according to BuzzFeed, that women, you are supposed to do. Before we get to that, though, let's get to this. Bill Maher back in the news. I don't know if you ever watched him on HBO. I do like listening to his podcast. He has a very interesting podcast that he does in a property that is next door to him. And he basically sits down in a chair. He invites people to come. And usually it's somebody that has something they want to talk about. They have a movie coming out. Mark Cuban was just on there. He's leaving Shark Tank. He also sold a share, not all of his shares, in the Dallas Mavericks, but he talks about why he sold a big share in the Dallas Mavericks, why he's leaving Shark Tank, and he also talks about some of the money he made and some of the money he lost on Shark Tank. My son and I really like watching that show. Anyway, Steve-O used to be on those movies, those Jackass movies. He has a pretty successful podcast. He's been sober, I guess, for like the last 16 years. And so Bill Maher invited him to come in and sit down again in this property that he is. I guess it was kind of a party place for him. And it's kind of like an old nightclub. And it does pretty well on YouTube, has a big following on Facebook. And so Bill Maher asked Steve-O to come. And Steve-O said, "I'll come. But I understand that you do this and you kind of have an open bar there." And then also Bill Maher likes to smoke what he calls closed cigarettes as he's doing this show, which is marijuana. He's a big proponent of that. In his show, Bill Maher's show, if you watch it, is highly scripted. He still does a lot of stand up when he travels, but when he sits down, he likes to relax. He says he drinks a couple times a week, and his two drinks he has when he's sitting down interviewing his guest. And then he likes to smoke some pot when he's doing it. And Steve-O said, "Hey, I'll come, but I've been sober for the last 16 years. So I'm going to ask as we sit there that you don't partake of that, because my sobriety is the most important thing to me." Bill Maher responded, "I'll pass." And said, "Hey, man, that's the way I do the show. And if you don't like the way I do the show, we'll see you another time." Your thoughts on Bill Maher? Does he owe it to Steve-O's sobriety to not sit there and smoke his closed cigarettes or have a glass of whiskey, if he likes?
This story was really interesting to me that so many people were outraged by it. I looked at it as a really positive. You have two men that know what their boundaries are, and they enforce their boundaries. Like to me, I would hope that if they saw each other in a social engagement or out and about at the grocery store, that they would still be friendly with each other. You have one guy that says, "Hey, I can't be around this stuff. It's a temptation to me." Not everybody that's in recovery is that way. Like, there are people in recovery that can be around alcohol, or they can be around people that maybe are smoking, and it doesn't bother them. Like, their sobriety is not tempted in that way. And Steve-O is not that guy. So he says, "This is my boundary. These are my terms." And then you had another guy. It's like, "Well, that's kind of not what I do." And so, to me, yeah, I think it's really cool that you have two people that are clearly defined what works for them. And the world's not going to stop turning if we don't get a Bill Maher, Steve-O podcast. And so it didn't work out. Like, they could do it by Zoom or whatever if they really want the exposure. But I think turning everything into a, you know, "Oh, Bill Maher should have, you know, he's being a jerk because he didn't." It's like, not really. Like, I don't think he's been, like, he's Bill Maher. Like, right. If you've ever followed him or watched his show or listened to his take, this is very much part of his brand and who he is as a person. So it's not like he was approaching Oprah and said, "Hey, Oprah, can I have a sober set?" Like, it's Bill Maher. So it'd be like going to Bill Burr and going, "Hey, Bill, I want to be on your podcast, but you can't make fun of anybody. Like, you can't, don't take any shots at me. Don't take any shots at what I do or my family." It's like, no, that's not what Bill Burr does. So, if you go on, you're going to talk with Bill Burr, and I've seen him do stuff with Mike Tyson where he's making fun of Mike Tyson to his face, and Tyson's laughing because he knows who Bill Burr is and Bill Burr knows who Mike Tyson is. So, to me, I think if I had written this story, it would have been a success story of like, hey, have your boundaries, know who you are. And then it's either going to dovetail with someone else or not. Like, we don't have the right. I think this is one of the big problems in society right now, is this belief that I'm going to go through life where other people need to accommodate my beliefs and what I, so because I believe something strongly, you have to change your behavior.
Yeah.
And I just fundamentally disagree with that. You have a chance, you can remove yourself, but you don't have the thing to say, you don't have the right to say, I believe X. So therefore, you know, I believe really strongly in God. So therefore you don't get any reproductive rights because I don't believe in those. It's like, no, yeah. That's not how life works. Yeah. I mean, in some, that example I just gave, unfortunately that is how it works in some states, but I just fundamentally disagree with that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because people said, well, he did it for Sheryl Crow. And so I went and I watched him with Sheryl Crow, and that's not true. He was sitting there having a drink. He had his clove cigarette in his hand. I saw it in his hand, and she's sitting there drinking a Budweiser. So, and I think for him, it's interesting when you hear him do the podcast that way, because he's brilliant. And you can tell that he's high and he slurs a little bit, but he is brilliant. Another brilliant person. Robert Downey Jr., for instance, and I think we'll talk about this in a future podcast. I just read an interview that he did in Esquire magazine. And this is now after he won his Academy Award for Oppenheimer. And they ask him in this interview at the end of it, because we're all waiting for him to ask him if he's ever going to be Tony Stark again. Well, we'll just talk about it here. He asks him in the Esquire magazine article if he's ever going to play Tony Stark again. And he used to say no. It's interesting now that he's won this Academy Award, because he's like, hey, he's a part of me. And I played him, you know, I think he played him over 9 times in 11 years, 9 times, 9 different movies. And what is interesting about that movie, and Gwyneth Paltrow has talked about this too, is they wrote that movie with Jon Favreau as it just kind of went along. And Gwyneth had to learn, because she would memorize all her lines, and then she'd come in and get so pissed as Pepper Potts, because Robert Downey Jr. would just start to improv. And she's like, damn it, what is he doing? And then she would see all these other characters improv, and they would write it on the fly. The movie was never done. The movie would always change. And that's what Robert Downey Jr. loved about it. And you can tell in this, I think Esquire magazine sent, this author spent 6 to 8 different hours with him in his home. And he's very manic as he's doing this, but he's also very brilliant. You can see what a brilliant addict does when they're not on substance and they're high on life, and he really is. And this, have you read the article?
Not the one you talked about, but I've seen versions of this.
This author is sitting there, and the author's phone rings, and Robert Downey Jr. looks at him, and he says, "Who is that?" And he said, "It's my son." He goes, "That seems important. You should answer it." He goes, "No, this may take a while. My son is writing an essay to try to get into college, and he's kind of stuck." And he says, "Answer the phone." So the author of Esquire answers the phone, and Robert Downey Jr. says, "Give me the phone." So he's on the phone with him, and he's like, "What's going on?" He said, "I'm trying to write this essay." And he explains to him, he kind of has writer's block, and He said they start talking a little bit, and Robert Downey Jr. learns in this conversation that this young man's brother has died. In fact, he died 5 years ago. And Robert Downey Jr. says, you should write about that. And then he hands the phone back to the gentleman that's writing the article. They're sitting at the kitchen table. He's sitting at Robert Downey Jr.'s kitchen table. Robert Downey Jr.'s kids have been in and out. He has pigs. The pet pigs have been in and out. His wife has been in and out. And they're sitting there. He's doing this interview. So he talks to his son. The gentleman from Esquire hangs up the phone. And Robert Downey Jr. again is sitting there. He goes, you know what? He goes, he's still thinking. He's like, he doesn't want to write about that because he feels like people will be sympathetic toward him and it'll give him a competitive advantage. He's like, give me the phone. So he can, and the kid on the other end of the phone is going, my God, I'm talking to Iron Man here. Because he grew up on the Iron Man films. And that is not what Robert Downey Jr. is thinking at all. He gets back on the phone with him and he says, hey, you feel you have a competitive advantage and that's why you don't want to write about this. But you know what? It's part of who you are and it's your story. And you should write about your story and let the chips fall. Write about it. This is what you should write about in your college essay. Write about it. Which reminds me, because in my college essay that I wrote to Notre Dame, this is what I wrote about. I wrote about my father leaving in my college essay to Notre Dame. And it's what got me into Notre Dame. So I was like, wow, this is very interesting that he's telling him this. Because I think it did give me a competitive advantage when people read the thing that I wrote to Notre Dame. So I'm tracking with this. So Robert Downey Jr. then has this moment with this young man. And then as he's getting off the phone, Robert Downey Jr. is crying. And the author writes about this. And at the end of the article, and I won't record, you should really read it, you guys, because you realize that Robert Downey Jr. is, he's incredibly smart and incredibly gifted and incredibly a manic addict who is high in life. And at the end of this article, the author reveals that his son was able to sit down and within 2 hours write and submit that essay for this college that he wanted to attend because of this conversation that he had with Robert Downey Jr., who was just being a Robert Downey Jr., but to this young man, he was talking to Iron Man and having this conversation.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like he is a unique individual.
Yeah.
And if you saw his Oscar speech of saying, you know, most people get up and say, oh, I'd like to thank the Academy and I want to thank my manager. He said, I'd like to thank my screwed up childhood.
Yeah.
He goes, because that's what brought me to here.
Yeah.
All of the things and tribulations that I had to go through. And to me, like your first point about, you know, him changing his mind to do Iron Man. I hope we get to a point in our culture where someone that changes their mind on something is not villainized. I see it as one of the biggest strengths. Yeah. When someone, we're in such a gotcha culture moment right now. Aha, Robert Downey changed his mind. He wasn't going to do Iron Man, and now he is. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's the agenda? Is it the Oscars? It's like, who cares, man? If somebody learns something new and says, I've changed my mind. I was going to do this,
yeah.
And now this thing happened to me, and I've changed my mind on a big issue or a small issue. I think that should be celebrated and not villainized.
Yeah.
Even with politicians, with our leaders, with parents, there's nothing that gives me more happiness than when I see a parent that changes their mind with their kid or apologizes to their kid, because it just shows them and the world, hey, I learned something. I thought I knew something. This event happened, and even though that person is 7 years old, I was wrong.
Yeah.
And so I learned that, and now I'm going to apologize. I'm changing my mind. Changing our mind should be a good thing. And if Robert Downey Jr. changed his mind, that's good for him. That's good for the movie franchise. It's probably good for the world. It's good for all the kids that love that movie. It's not bad that he changed his mind. It's good when someone changes their mind.
Yeah, and he explains because they all spent time writing these characters and writing the movie as they were doing it and improvising the movie, that he's like, I am him and he is me when it comes to Tony Stark. To put a bow around it, he is sat in the chair with Bill Maher where Steve-O can't sit, and that's okay. Because Robert Downey Jr. isn't triggered by that anymore. But if you know his story, you know early on in his recovery, he was. And even they ask him the night he got the statue, or Oppenheimer, they asked him how he felt about Jimmy Kimmel coming out and making fun of him and his recovery. And he's like, man, I think Jimmy Kimmel is a national treasure. It doesn't bother him. He's not judgmental about it. He just sees his recovery as part of his story. So some people can sit in that chair that have gone through recovery and not be triggered. I have a friend who missed his mom passing away. He was out in the driveway getting high, smoking pot. He cannot, for the rest of his life, and he's been in recovery for 40 years, he cannot be around pot smoke because it triggers him to his mother's death, and he can't do it. He just can't. So for Steve-O, there's a trigger in that where, as you said, Ron, beautifully, he understands that's his boundary, but there's other people that have been through recovery, like Robert Downey Jr., that can sit in that chair. We will see you on the other side of this. It's Don here with my good friend Andy from Les Schwab. He's an Eastsider. We're not going to hold that against him. Andy, you guys are doing something cool. It's Food Awareness Month, the month of April. We're going to drive out hunger. We're working with Cairo 7, QFC, and Food Lifeline. You want people to head over to QFC, buy some food, and drop it off where?
We're taking those donations at all of our 83 Western Washington Les Schwab locations. You can do a monetary donation at QFC. But the biggest thing is we're collecting this food so that we can distribute it within our communities to help out the families in need in our areas.
Yeah. So don't forget, Cairo 7 Cares, our good friends at Food Lifeline, Les Schwab, and the Rhonodon Nation, we're all working together. You can donate your non-perishable food item at any of the 83 Western Washington Les Schwab Tire Centers. All food collected will be delivered to Food Lifeline to feed local families right here in our area. So join us, you guys. This is brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers, Cairo 7 Cares, and QFC. Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing what, Andy? The right thing since when?
1952.
You nailed it. Hey, you guys. Ron and Don here for Ron and Don. Love those guys. Actually, your number one relocation specialist. What do I mean? Alex reached out the other day. He lives in California. He's a tech worker. He's moving to Queen Anne Mountain. And he said, you know what? I'm seeing these homes online, but what do they look like in person? I said, there's only one way to find out. Let me go see. I went to see a house yesterday, right here on First Avenue West, that a buyer had spent $1,770,000 on in June of 22 at the height. They just put it on 2 days ago at $1,485,000. That's about a $200,000 haircut. And so I called the broker and I said, what is going on? And he said, you know what? We're moving back to the Bay. They're having a baby. We have to move. And as a result of that, we have to take this $200,000 haircut. Right now, you guys, there are deals in the marketplace. Deals right now that are happening where people bought in the height and they have to sell now here in the spring of 2024. So when you need our help, when you need to get eyes on, reach out to us at Ron and Don Real Estate. Let's do a Ron and Don sit down. All you have to do is go to ronanddonsitdown.com and schedule your virtual sit down with us today. Whether you're relocating, yeah, or whether you're getting ready to sell, buy, or invest in the sound, don't forget, Ron and Don, we sell the sound at ronanddonsitdown.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Don't forget, if you're buying, selling, investing, or completely confused about the NAR, so many people are completely confused about the NAR, that lawsuit, the repercussions, contact us. Let's do a sit down, Ron and Don. sitdown.com, and we won't spin it. We'll just tell you the truth. And we share that truth on our podcast. We'll continue to do so. Check out our Friday shows where we've talked a lot about it. People still have questions, lots and lots of questions. Share it with a friend because I think we answer a lot of those questions. And if you have a question for us, just reach out on social media. He's Ron Upshaw. I'm Don O'Neill. We're both very active on Facebook and Instagram. Ron, a little bit. What are you more active on it these days, Instagram or Facebook?
I'm balancing it out now. I think I'm probably even Steven.
Yeah. So just reach out to us. You can DM us. And that's a good way to sit down. We can do a sit down or you can write us. I'm Don at ronanddon.com. He's Ron at ronanddon.com. Everything is under the banner of ronanddon.com, whether it's radio, real estate. And thanks for allowing us to be your real estate agents this year. We really appreciate it. Here's some things I think are very interesting that guys are sharing on BuzzFeed. These are things that they wish that their girlfriend would do more. These are non-sexual things, okay, that they wish that they would do more. Number one, guys say they go to heaven every time their wife or girlfriend or partner ruffles their hair or scratches their scalp or gives them a back rub. I would love her to do that more. I wish she did it more often because it is amazing. What say you about a back rub
I could not agree like 1,000% on that one. It's a very vulnerable spot for a guy to be in, to ask for that. So if you're like the head scratch or the back scratch is like number one on my list when I read this of like basically physical things, physical touch or proximity or gestures that guys like that are not in a sexual way. It's and for whatever reason, a lot of guys feel like it's hard to ask for that. To ask for things that they like in a non-sexual way. Like our culture, I think, tries to make everything, every type of touch a veiled sexual advance. And it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. I've never shared this. I dated a girl like 7-8 years ago. And the way she would pet my dog, because people that really love dogs know that dogs really don't want to be patted or petted on the head or messed with around the nose. They don't. And Ron knows this. They want a full body rub, side rub, get down low. Like when I first meet a dog and the dog wants, like I met a dog last night at one of our properties. They were having an issue there, so I stopped by. And it was an old yellow lab, really cool, beautiful dog. I have another lab. In fact, they have 3 dogs staying at my properties now. And they love a good body rub. Anytime she would greet my dog, I would see this thing that she would do, and then she would knuckle him, and my dog would just get right down on the floor and just about go to sleep. She would do the same thing to my back. And
what do you mean by knuckle?
She would use her knuckles in the way that she would massage.
I see.
Yeah. I miss it to this day. And like, I wish I could coach other people that I've dated to do it, but I don't know how to bring it up. And I don't even know exactly how to do it. But my dog loved it. I loved it. And nobody's been, no one's ever replicated it.
Yeah.
I love it.
There are people who just have a sense of touch.
And I miss that so much.
That part is odd when someone thinks they're doing something and they're not. You know, if someone does not know how to massage, they're rubbing you in a way that's like, yeah, this is actually painful. Sore. Like you can stop that now. Like that doesn't feel good. And the fact that you don't know that doesn't feel good is alarming.
Yeah. One guy says, let me have one day a week for myself. We work together. She owns a small business. We're together almost 24/7. I love her, but sometimes I need to relax. I need to play my games and not work all the time. I get that, but don't you need more than one day to yourself? Like, I need some time every day to myself, don't you? I don't need one day.
I think it's an individual thing.
I need time every day. Just that's why I get up early, because that's my time. And when I don't take that time, it affects the rest of the day and the rest of the week.
You just need to communicate that. Like, everybody's different on that effect. But as long as you communicate it and you know it's not personal, then do your thing.
Join me on my random late night expeditions to the kitchen for a snack. There's something oddly comforting about tiptoeing in the dark and rummaging through the fridge. I disagree with that. When I go through the fridge, because I put some weird shit together, I want to do that on my own.
It's because you're ashamed
of it. Sometimes I'm eating stuff that I don't want people to know about. So, yeah.
You have some food shame.
I'm doing that in the dark of night. I'm not sharing that with anyone. Are you?
I would do that. As an offshoot of that, it can be super kind of intimate in a way when you cook, when someone lets you cook for them,
yeah.
Where they're not, they're sitting there watching you cook. And you're doing it not in like, oh, we got to slap out a meal today, but like, I want to cook something for you. And they're sort of there engaging with you, talking, and you're preparing food for someone, you know, that can be, I think, a really cool thing.
Yeah. Let me spoon. I agree with that. But then let me unspoon when I have to sleep. And then don't try to re-spoon when I'm sleeping, because as we get older and I wake up, now I got to pee and now I'm not going back to sleep. So I don't want to spoon. Unspoon, respoon.
I don't want someone's...
Once you spoon and unspoon, you're unspooned for the rest of the night. And you can respoon in the morning when the intention is to get up, then that's the time to respoon. You agree?
I agree. I also would like to add to that a sub-point.
That's
of
some
like,
old
I,
man stuff right there. I don't,
ain't nobody wants your million-degree leg on top of my leg. Like, there's no leg overlap.
Not for 10 minutes?
No. If you got a big old hot leg, like, that's just, no, I'm not into it.
All right, a couple more here. Initiate stuff more, not just sexually. My last year's relationship ended because I realized I was the only one who put an effort into doing stuff. I have to say that's really true. Like when you date people and all they want to do is come over to your house and you're the one that's cooking and you're the one making reservations and you're the one saying, meet me here. I have to say there's a lot more of that going on. And it is... Like, what's really nice for my son, hopefully about his birthday, is his birthday is planned with a bunch of surprises. Surprises are nice, and I don't really get surprised anymore. Do you? To get surprised?
You make a good point. Like, people should, I believe, I think in our society, the first date, and maybe the first couple of dates, typically are the responsibility of the man. I get that as the way we grew up, that's sort of expected. After that, if you're going to continue, I really think that both parties should participate and throw some things out that they want to do and they like to see. And you'll see a lot of people, if you are in the dating pool, you know, I see this from women. I don't look at men's profiles, so I don't know if they do it, but they're like, don't even ask me for our first date should be to grab a drink or a coffee. Like, I'm not that kind of person. It's like, okay, like, you're dictating what the first date should be. Like, see ya.
This one, though, the final one, have a genuine real answer is to where you want to eat out or where you want to order from, or even where you want to go, or even where maybe you want to go on a trip. I think that's true, because it shows that someone has spent some time thinking about you, thinking about us, thinking about something that we could do together. And especially if you're a parent, you're constantly doing this for your kid, because you're trying to show them and expose them to things that they've never seen or been exposed to. So that's a lot of work. So when someone comes along and you're like, hey, where you want to eat tonight? I don't know. Where you want? Hey, I know this place. And Ron always has an answer for that. Hey, man, this place in Ballard just opened up. I really want to try it. Or there's this new thing. I think that's really nice in a friendship or a relationship when somebody has an answer for that. It's something that they'd like to try, and whatever they're trying, they would like to share with you. So
I agree. I think the takeaway for me on this story, and it's not just for men, but for all people, and not just romantic, but friendship, all your relationships, ask for what you want. Like, ask for what you want. And I think sometimes you'd be surprised that people will give it to you.
Yeah, the chef in here said he wants someone to cook for him, and he said nobody will. Because it sucks being a chef, man. Nobody will cook for me. Well, we'll see you in about a minute.
Hey, it's Ron and Don here with Mitch Weeks. You know him better as Mitch.Loans. Mitch, you have a really cool new product for investors. I think it's kind of the first I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, so we have a great new investor cash flow program. And what this is we take the house you are buying and we inspect it, not you, the borrower. And so what we do is we look at the house and we say, will it cash flow? If you put 20% down, will it make more money than it's going to cost you to keep paying off your mortgage? And if it does, it's yours. It doesn't matter what you make on your own. It doesn't matter all these other things that we usually have to document. They don't matter. They're gone. It's just, does this house make sense? And if it does, you can buy it.
All right. So you can go up to four doors, up to four units on this. And Don and I have never heard of a product like this. It's pretty exciting if you've been wanting to get into the investment game. So go to Mitch.loans right now. Set up a time to talk to Mitch. See if you qualify for this new program. That's Mitch.loans.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. This is a show also about real estate, and it looks like Jeff Bezos is buying a lot of real estate. In fact, I think he bought three mansions down in Miami. He just lost the, he just left the state of Washington, and some people say he did that for financial reasons. Does he really need to do anything for financial reasons at this point? Or
I mean, I think if you like it down there, and
particular taxes, or
probably not.
It seems like you really want to. In fact, his ex-wife is having such a hard time giving away the billions of dollars that she inherits, because as soon as Mackenzie gives the money away, the other money that's invested just keeps growing. And then her net worth, even though she's given away billions, it continues to go up. He kind of has the same problem.
It's interesting.
And if you're going to invest in real estate, it's not like he's going to go buy a starter home, because people get on him for it. It's like, he's not buying a starter home in West Seattle with the kind of money that he has. So he went down to Miami. He bought three mansions there. He's living in one mansion while he tears one mansion down and builds another mansion. And I mean, you're in the mansion business. You see a lot of stars do this too, because there are a lot of people that are in the entertainment business that make a lot of money, but they don't snowball their wealth, or they haven't made money for a long time. So they look to rent some of these mega mansions out. And Ben Affleck's like, man, I'll own that mansion. And Matt Damon is like, I'll own that mansion. A lot of those guys invest their real estate in mansions, and some do rather well when they flip them. And Jeff Bezos may be that guy.
I think the thing that people miss on the true upper echelon of most wealthy people in the world, I think a lot of these things are driven by security. So like, why does he need to buy three properties right next to each other? Because they have 24-hour security. There's always a target on your back of you and your family. And so, and they keep all of that stuff very confidential. So yes, it's a little ostentatious, but a lot of that, I believe, is security driven and proximity driven. They don't want someone 15 feet away from their house, living in their house, for security reasons. My nephew-in-law, it works in real estate in Florida, and his firm just had that most expensive house in America listing. It was down in Naples, Florida, and it was, I think, like 15 acres on the waterfront, and I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars. It is just, it's a different thing, man. When you, I've been down where their office is and talk with them and stuff, and they have this tier of listings down there, and mostly it's people, not like Jeff Bezos, but it'll be equity traders and hedge fund guys and stuff from New York that come down and want a property for the tax haven. And I mean, I don't know how many $100+ million homes there are in Seattle. There's probably a few, but it is very common in South Florida to have $100 million+ properties. They're incredible. They're right on the water. The boathouses and all of the compounds are insane. And I follow my nephew-in-law on his socials. They do a lot of video and stuff on these properties. And it's a different universe of clientele, different universe of money, and different universe of what those folks are looking for.
Yeah. So, hey, you guys, if you want to buy a $100 million property, we got a couple of realtors right here.
I would definitely represent someone to buy a $100 million property.
Make that happen.
Give me a Ron at RonAndDon.com.
Yeah. Hey, if you need us, RonAndDon.com. That's where everything about our real estate business, everything about our radio show that we've done, I think 30 years. years now. So we appreciate everyone listening. And don't forget, Les Schwab has their food drive going on right now. You usually hear that in the fall. It's happening in the spring. This is kind of food insecurity month. So stop by Les Schwab Tire Store, drop off non-perishable food. They're doing that along with our friends at Kyra 7 and our good friends at Food Lifeline too. So they really need your help this time of year. Thanks for stopping by and being a part of something bigger than yourself. All right. Don't forget, if you're buying, selling, investing, you do need representation, because I can't wait for someone to sit on the other side of the table and not be represented. I am taking them down to Chinatown, as Robert De Niro said, and meet the Fockers. That's like walking into a courtroom and not having an attorney. Yeah, you can represent yourself, but it usually doesn't go well. So anyway, we are here to represent. We're also here to explain your real estate journey and to meet you exactly where you're at. Some people, you may have done multiple real estate transactions, but you don't really understand what you did. It's important to take time to learn, and it's very important to Ron and myself for you to learn along with us so you feel like you have that skill set. Because real estate is an incredible leverage point in all our lives. All of us are supposed to save about $1.5 million before we retire. The majority of Americans do not. About 1% of Americans get to that $1.5 million mark. About another 8% of us get to about $1 million, and then the rest of us never get there. And we become reliant on things that may not exist in the future, like Social Security. And you saw with inflation, and the reason why people are so pissed off, prices went up, but the things that really matter to us, they never really came back down. It just kind of evened out, and it stopped going up so much. And that's where politicians are saying, hey, man, inflation's gone. Yeah, whatever. Head up, shoulders back. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to the Ron and Don Show. All right, on the Ron and Don Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.